Okay, perfect. Good afternoon, everyone. It's 3:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on April 16, 2020. Thank you, everybody, for joining the call. This is call number one from the four-week virtual boot camp to get you started on your business plan. My name is Erica Ferenzi. I am the Director of Programs with How to Manage a Small Law Firm, and I am going to be with you today probably for 15, 20 minutes while Arjun can join us. He had a little bit of an emergency today, but he's going to be joining us a little bit later. Like I said, I am the programs director for How to Manage a Small Law Firm. What that means is that I work directly under Arjun. And as you know, we have a team of of 30 management advisors, CEOs, COOs, and CFOs, which are our external fractional CEOs, COOs, and CFOs that work week after week with our over 400 law firms and clients that we work with. All those people are in my department. They report to me, and I am in charge of making sure that all of our members and all of our clients are progressing correctly through the different stages of growth. If you have had a chance to go to the HTM or How to Manage a Small Law Firm website, you already know that we have identified six different stages of growth that happen very predictably, very reliably for the growth of businesses and law firms. The first one is the create level, where the law firms are anywhere and have a gross revenues from anywhere between $0 and $250,000. Second one is the upgrade level, where the law firm is between $250,000 to around $500,000, $600,000. The third one is B7, breaking the seven-figure barrier, we call it, and it's anywhere between $600,000 to around $1.2 million. And then we have the fourth stage of growth that we call it KIT, keep it together, which is when the law firms have revenues from 1.2 million to around 3.5 million. And then after that comes the ICFO, which is from 5 million to around 12 million, and so on and so forth. So that's my job. This is what I do. Just super, super quickly, just 1 minute to give you the background of who I am and why you should listen to me. As you already know, we are not going to have a live quarterly meeting this quarter. If we were going to do that, I would meet you at the bootcamp, because I'm usually at those 2 days at the bootcamp when with you guys. If you guys stay with us, I would be happy to see you at the July LQM. So my background is in business administration and finance. I also had my own business before joining Arjun in his business. I grew my own business from zero to over $1 million. And I am not a lawyer. I am not a lawyer, but I am a business person. This is not a course to teach you how to practice law or how to be a lawyer. You already went to law school for that. This is a boot camp to teach you how to build your business. And that's my specialty. If you need to learn how to be a good lawyer or how to practice family law or how to produce legal documents, definitely you should not be talking to me. If you know or want to know how to grow your business and how to make more money with your business and live the life that you want to live and the kind of life that you want to create for you, for your family, for your loved ones, you definitely want to be talking to me. Anyhow, when Arjun joins, he's going to be introducing himself to you guys and tell you a little bit about him and how he built this company and what we do and how we do it and his background and all of that. But I want to tell you that obviously Arjun has had this business for over 10 years. We have been growing the business and helping thousands and thousands of law firms grow their gross revenues very predictably, very reliably throughout the years for the last 15 years. And we are recognized like to be the best and the largest external fractional company to offer C-suite services for law firms. So growing a law firm to $1 million, to a law firm to $2 million is not complicated. It is not rocket science. We are going to be focused over the next 4 weeks with you on teaching you the basics and the fundamentals of your business plan. And we need to, we are going to teach you to think through the process of the seven parts of the business and to work on each one of those seven parts of the business. So you, at the end of this 4 weeks, you end up with a way for you to know predictably, reliably, how is that this business that you started, some of you had just started this business, some of you have been in business for a couple of years, some of you have had your business for several years. So irrespective of that, what is that you need to do in order for your business to grow predictably and reliably and be able to create the kind of life that you want to be created? So we understand that right now, the stage in which the world is a very challenging situation that we are all going through. You are not the only person, you are not the only business who is struggling with the situation that is happening right now, because basically the economy has become, come to a halt, but it's not going to stay like that forever. That is the mindset, that is the focus that you need to have and to put your re effort in resources into learning how to grow your law firm. It's not going to stay like that forever. And since there are so many businesses and so many law firms and also businesses that have already gone out of business, that have already fired all their staff, the moment that things start opening up again and the courts start to open again, like in Florida, some of the courts started opening again, the life is going to go back to, I'm not going to say to what it was before, because I don't think it will go back to exactly what it was before. We are going to have to find a new normal, but it's definitely going to start rolling again. And when that happens, you guys are going to experience, you guys and the people who are ready for it, are going to experience really a surge of business. There's going to be so much opportunity that what you want to do is use this time that you have right now in order to plan for that, to prepare for that. So when it comes, you can hit the ground running, because there's going to be a lot of backlog for a lot of people, and you want to definitely be prepared so you can kick it off faster and better than other people. I am not going to lie, out of for our 400 firms, there are some that are struggling a lot. I am not saying that they are not, but there are others, quite a few of them actually, that they are having their best months ever. Gross revenue wise, they're growing like they have not grown before. Why? Exactly because of what I'm telling you. There's a lot of people around you that are what Arjun calls for feeding the game, and in that for feeding of the game, they are creating opportunities for all the other law firms around them that are ready and open to be able to do business with the with the clients. No, this call will not be rescheduled, and we're going to get to the content in a second. And yeah, the call will not be rescheduled, and not he might be 20 minutes late, 30 minutes late, whatever. I am doing the same introduction that he would do. So no, the call is not going to be rescheduled. We started, well, he started HTM in 2007, and at the beginning of the year, he grew from $75,000 in 2009 to around $200,000, to then $600,000, to then $1 million, to then $750,000. Then HTM grew from $750,000 to $3 million, $4 million, $6 million, etc. And during 2019, we closed at almost 16 million, 15.6, something like that, $1 million. And that is what we do. That is what we do to help law firms grow their own businesses. It's really important that you disabuse yourself from the idea that in order to grow your business faster, you need to work harder. That is what most people believe. Hold on a second. That is what a lot of people believe that they have to do, and it's not correct. You don't have to work 10 times harder, 10 times faster in order to grow your business. You need to work smarter. You need to work smarter. You need to understand that the moment that you start growing your own business, you now become the CEO of a business whose main responsibility and main role is to drive business to your factory, right? You have a factory that it's called a law firm, and in your case, the product that you produce is legal services, legal documents. So hold on a second. What is happening with this? Yeah, okay. There are legal documents, but there's definitely a factory, and what we're going to do today is that we are going to teach you, right, how to create a factory, and the factory that can ultimately run without you. A factory that does not require your presence, so it can get clients, sign up clients, produce legal services, bill the clients, charge the clients, collect money, and so on and so forth. One of our value propositions for the law firms is that ultimately what we are doing, and when we're implementing all these frameworks and all of these things that we are going to teach you, is the ultimate goal is to replace yourself inside of your law firm. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to sell the law firm, or you need to leave the law firm, or you need to, find something else to do. What we mean is that you can actually run your business. Your business can actually run without you. And that is what we are going to do. Okay. We always begin the first call of this boot camp with talking about some principles and some universal principles to keep in mind, things that you want to keep in mind in order for you to grow your business and make more money. And to you believe it or not, this is going to be one of the most common denominators that you will want to come back again and again and again to, because you really want to develop a muscle to learn to think differently than the rest of the population out there. Think differently than the rest of the population out there outside of the bubble, right? Probably you already heard Arjun mention that we call HTM, we call the bubble, because we literally think and apply and do things completely different than the way people do things and think through things out there. So we share with you some of the universal principles that can help you think through different challenges as you go through them. These universal principles are going to help you discover opportunities that are hidden within every problem. Within every problem exists an opportunity, always, 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 always. And the bigger the problem is, the bigger the opportunity that exists inside of that problem. So when you find that gigantic, overwhelming issue, challenge, or problem that scares the hell out of you need to train yourself to react with enthusiasm, to react with excitement, to actually be grateful for the challenge that you have in front of you, because there, inside of that challenge or inside of that problem, lies an amazing opportunity. Now, there are moments, and several moments, that you won't know what the opportunity is. You just won't be able to see it at that moment. You won't be able to identify it. Maybe you need some help from someone else, like from your CEO or from a mentor or from somebody else that you talk to find what the opportunity is. Sometimes the opportunities take some time to reveal themselves. But if you apply and confront each and every problem that you have, knowing with the certainty that in each and every one of those problems, there's always going to be a bunch of opportunity of equal or greater size, you are going to be able to get out of that problem way faster, way better, way easier. Because most people are going to spend all their time, their energy, their mental bandwidth to keep on focusing on the problem. How do I solve this problem? How do I problem, 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 problem? And they keep on producing the same problem. When you start focusing on the opportunity, things completely start changing for you. So that's number one. The first principle that we wanted to teach you is that every problem contains an equal opportunity within it. Principle number two, universal principle number two, is the principle of relativity. You get to choose what you're going to relate everything that happens to you to. You get to choose whether you see the world as a problem. You get to choose whether you see the world as an opportunity. You also get to choose whether you want to see what is in front of you as a big problem, as a small problem, as a big opportunity, as a small opportunity. It's all relative. Like nothing is big or too much or too little until you compare that thing that you're focusing on to something else. This is one of the reasons why when you have people that through their lives, they have not experienced a lot of challenge, that they have always been, let's call it, quote unquote, pampered and shielded from the challenges of life. Usually these people, when they face a challenge or a little setback, they crumbled under stress. They crumble, they stop, they want to quit, they bitch and they moan and they complain. And it's very, very difficult to work with people like that. On the contrary, when you have people who have made it a life, their, part of their life's purpose to lean into the challenges, to find the opportunities, and to overcome the challenges, there's this saying, I think it was, I don't remember if it was, it came from Rocky, the movie, that said, it's the important thing is not how many times you fall, but how fast can you get up? And it's the same thing. If you apply that mindset and you really stop the compulsion to keep on comparing yourself to other people, right? To use other people's success or other people's growth or other people's circumstances to measure either your success or your level of income or your level of growth, and you really focus on you and yourself only, then your life is going to be so much easier and so much faster. So the second principle is the principle of relativity. The moment that you compare yourself to other people, when you're constantly comparing yourself to other people, that is going to be a form of self-abuse. We always say when you compare yourself to other people, and that's the life and the reality in which you live, you are, in a way, abusing yourself. Because nobody else will have the exact same circumstances, with the exact same opportunities, with the exact same upbringing, with the exact same of training, teaching, background, etc. Nobody has the same set of circumstances that you do that got you to where you are today. So why on earth would you compare yourself to other people? If you want to make yourself better, you will find someone or something to compare yourself to demonstrate that you can and are actually indeed doing better than them. And most likely that's going to be a true statement, right? If, we compare, for example, how to manage a small law firm with Apple or with Microsoft, we could actually say, oh my God, I feel like, garbage because my business is struggling and it's horrible because look, I am only selling $16 million and these people, were able to sell whatever. But on the other hand, if we look at the normal businesses in the United States, and how much we grows and how fast we grow and so on and so forth, we can also make ourselves feel better. So stop comparing yourself. Don't do that to yourself. Do not be abusive to yourself, and do not compare yourself to people who are better, who are doing better than you, and do not compare yourself to people who are doing not as well as you. That comparison is completely arbitrary and it is not good for you. So I think we already said that. So please do not compare yourself to other people. And always remember that when you do, or if you do, right, remember that nothing is big, small, fat, slim, tall, short, too much, too little, etc., until you compare it to something else. So the moment that you use those words and you're comparing things, please stop and stop being or exercising in self-abuse. Next principle. Next principle is the law of rhythms. Rhythm. Everything that goes up will go down. Everything that goes down will go up. Which means, and business, which is very interesting, right? Everything in this universe follows a rhythm. Like I said, everything that goes up will eventually go down, and what goes down will eventually go up, and so on and so forth. We have days and we have nights, we have high tide and we have low tide, and so on and so forth. Nothing will last forever. So 1 minute you might be on top of the world, and 1 minute you might be, you know, with great gross revenues and with great marketing and with great work and this and that. And then if you take your eye off the target, then most likely you are going to experience a contraction, right? We call it business experiences, expansion and contraction, different stages. And 1 month you might have a great month of cash flow and extra cash, and then the next month you might have an unexpected expense, an unexpected opportunity that comes your way. Maybe you find a fantastic team member that you really want to hire, and because you need a person, but you don't need the person today. Maybe you need the person in 1 month, 1 month and a half, or 2 months, but you found the fantastic person today, the great team member today, and maybe you want to go on a limb and hire that people today, and you need to figure out how to make that investment in order to grow your law firm. So you are going to always, and I want you to remember that you're always through the stages of growth of your law firm, you're always going to experience those ups and those downs. And that's why, for example, when we start teaching you the part of financials that we're going to teach you, I think it's week three, I believe it is, from this boot camp, we are going to tell you to always be measuring the year-to-date variance. So, for example, if you say, you know, each month I am expecting, I want, my business requires to get 30 new prospects so we can convert 15 of them into paying clients. So we can, you know, 15 new clients at $5,000, we are going to have $60,000 in gross revenues. And then you're always expecting to have, we said, 30 prospects. If on month one you have 35, you say, oh my goodness, I'm great, I'm top of the world. But in the second month, what if you got 25 and you start worrying and you start, oh my God, what is going on? Why is this so low? Or maybe you got 20, right? And why you will drive yourself insane. But if you always measure the year-to-date variance, right? The first month you were at 35, so you're at plus five. You were expecting 30, you got 35, you're at plus five. The second month, you were expecting 30, the same 30, but you got 20. However, you have five surplus from the first month, and then you look and you see that you're a little bit behind, but it's not the end of the world. And then the third month, maybe you get, let's say, another 35, and now you're in zero variance. So that way you keep your sanity, right? You're always, sometimes you're going to be up, you're going to be down, but you are going to always be measuring your year-to-date variances so you can keep your sanity and you don't have to go insane with any of these things. And when you start, one thing that you want to know, and I already mentioned it, but I want to say it now again, is that growth requires a lot of cash, right? Like for the same reasons that I said, maybe you need to hire an associate, maybe you need to hire an associate and a billing clerk, or maybe you need to hire at some point an associate and a paralegal at the same time. And your margins, your profit margin in your business might get thinner, might get smaller, and you might be a little cash tight for a little while you bring in this new capacity and bring on board, train these people so they can start to be profitable for you. So there's going to be moments during the year in which you're going to have high profit margins to the extent that you are the person in your business that does everything, right? That you do the marketing and you do the sales and you do the legal production and you do the billing and you do all of those crazy things that some people even do their own bookkeeping. You're going to have less expenses, right? Because you need to pay less salaries. So your profit margins are going to be higher. However, that's unsustainable. You're going to kill yourself if you keep on working like that. You need to bring in resources so your business can grow and you can liberate some time from your busy week and from your days you can actually focus on the business. And when you do that, your margin, your profit margin might get temporarily smaller, but it will go back up. So this is the principle of rhythm of growing a business that you need to understand and want to understand that is natural, so you don't freak out and you don't believe there is a problem. Being able to think straight, being able to understand the stages that your business is going through. Hold on a second. What happened with this? Oh, there it is. Okay. Being able to understand the process that you're going through, it's part of being entrepreneurially mature, to have and exercise entrepreneurial maturity. And most people, right, unless you are one of those rare specimens that was born with that, most people need to develop that when they're growing their own businesses, because most likely for most of you, 90% of people have never ran a bigger business than the one that you have before, right? Maybe you the most that you've ever grossed your business is, let's say, 300,000 or 500,000, whatever the number is. You just know what is required to do that. You don't know what is required to do something else. So growing our businesses through the six stages of growth that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, and I already mentioned them, it's important that you don't freak out when you start experiencing these many changes, right? There's a lot of people who, when they experience change, because they equate change with pain, equate change with problems, equate change with something bad, they freak out, they get scared, and that starts creating a lot of problems for you. However, if you know what is coming, you can plan for it. If you know what is coming, either you can slow it down and stock up in a little bit more cash before you enter the next phase of business, or you can say, okay, let's buckle up. That's what most of our members do. Let's buckle up and let's do this thing because I really want to grow faster and grow faster and grow my business faster. if you can get through the stages that we are going to mention, then life is going to be so much easier. And then you know what? When you get to the next stage, you can breathe again. It's like, you know, okay. Because when you're in the process of changing from the, for example, if you are grossing, let's say $250,000, you're in that moment in the create stage, you're mostly going to be doing it all yourself. Maybe you have a receptionist, maybe a couple of part-time people. But you get to a place between $250,000 and $300,000 in which you just can't grow anymore. So you're exhausted. You feel like there is nothing else that you can do to go to the next stage. And then when we teach you how to do that, then you breathe again. It's like, okay, good. I did it and it's going to be fine. And I'm in the next stage and I survived. And with time, and by the way, the same thing happens when you are having cash flow issues, right? There's going to be moments in which you are going to experience what we call inside of the bubble a cash crunch, because you're growing fast, because you just made some hires, because this or that or the other, your business could experience a cash crunch. And when you do that, the first time you do it, right, we actually have inside of How to Manage something that is called a cash crunch protocol. And the first time that you hit a cash crunch and you need to produce $5,000, $10,000 in 2 days, you're going to freak out. You're going to call us and you're going to say, oh my God, what do I do? The whole sky is falling down on me. I'm freaking out. What do I do? When we help you walk through this and you truly understand and then give yourself the experience that you can actually produce money, I'm not going to say it overnight, but almost overnight, you know, in 2, 3, 4 days, you get a new skill set. You get a new skill set to understand how is that your business actually makes money. And spoiler alert, I'm going to give you a preview into how your business makes money. Your business makes money by helping other people. There is billions of people out there in the planet. There's millions of people out there in the planet who are having lots of problems. If you can communicate with those people and find a way to communicate that you can solve the problems and conduct your sales calls from the perspective that they have a problem, you have a solution, and in order for you to solve their problem, they need you because you can deliver value to them, that is how your business creates money. That's how your business creates money. Okay, so one thing that I forgot to do at the beginning is that I want to do a couple of housekeeping calls. Announcements. All of you must have gotten access to a forum. In the email that welcomed you to this bootcamp, you got an email with access to the forum. In that forum, you will be able to, number one, post questions, and we're going to be moderating that forum. You are going to be, you can ask questions about the homework. You will find some lessons and some videos that you might want to listen to before the call that we're going to have every Thursday. The calls are going to be every Thursday from around 3 o'clock to around 6 o'clock, okay, from Eastern time. Every Thursday from 3 o'clock to about 6 o'clock Eastern time. These calls are going to be anywhere between 2 to 3 hours long. And we're going to have at around 1 hour to 1.5 to 60 minutes to 90 minutes hour lesson every day. And then we're going to open it up for Q&A. Once you, in that same forum, you're going to be able to see and find the homeworks for each one of these lessons. You're going to have a workbook and you're going to have the homework. Okay, hold on a second. Arjun is texting me. Give me just a second. He's about to join in like 5 or 10 minutes. You're going to find the homeworks, and you're going to find the audios, and you're also going to find the replays from these calls. And oh, look at that. Stephanie is already here with us, and she posted on the chat the link to access that forum, and also the password to do that. Then after we do the lesson, we are going to have around, you know, an hour and a half or an hour of Q&A, and it is your own responsibility to raise your hand. If you are dialing in this conference line, you will be able, from your cell phone, you will be able to raise your hand by pressing *9. *9 on your phone will raise your hand. If you are logging in through the Zoom app, you will see that at the bottom of your screen, whether you're logging in through your computer or through your phone, you will be able to go to participants and then raise your hand. I think it's in participants. I suggest that when you start doing the homework every week, you, if you have questions, if you need some coaching, if you need us to answer any specific questions, the moment you jump into this conference line, you raise your hand. So when we open up for Q&A, you are one of the first ones that actually, you know, get their questions answered. We are all adults, so it's your responsibility to raise your hand and to get your questions answered. We will answer your questions, but you made an investment to be here, so we are not going to be chasing you, okay? You need to take advantage of the resources that you've invested in and then profit from that. Then, we are not here to force you to consume this content. You need to consume the content, go to the private forum, post your questions. We're going to moderate your questions. And also when you come to these calls, you raise your hand to be able to get your questions answered. So how to manage a small law firm.com /bootcamp April 15, 2020. And the password to access that is business plan. So let me see. I know, Stephanie, that you're with us. We need to start on the password. Okay. There you are. Okay, there you are. Hey, Arjun. Yes. Awesome. Do you want to begin with the lesson or maybe introducing yourself? We did all the universal laws, and we were about to begin with the lesson on goal setting.
Okay.
Okay.
So first off, welcome everyone for being here. I think most of you probably got here by way of one of the symposiums or one of the other. Man, I've been doing so much stuff the last few weeks with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lawyers who I have never met or spoken to before. if you've already heard this introduction, I will ask you to please be patient, because maybe there's someone who didn't. I'll make it short. And if you want to know more, by all means, sincerely, I think that there's parts of my story that would be very instructive. I started this business, How to Manage a Small Law Firm, in 2008, which was a pretty rough economic time to start a business. And I've been able to build it through all kinds of different downturns and stock crashes, stock market problems, and I mean, you name it. And I know that Erica already talked a lot about that wherever there's a problem, there's always an opportunity. And since law firms are in the business of solving problems, the more talk out there about all the problems, all I'm hearing is, and all that our members are hearing is opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. So, but here's me. I mean, here's my story. I am a licensed attorney. I went to law school at Nova Southeastern in Fort Lauderdale. My undergraduate was in Washington, D.C. I graduated, passed the bar exam, worked for a federal bankruptcy judge. We just heard 40 minutes of vamping by Erica. Can you please start with the actual instruction? Yes. All right. So if anyone has any questions about me, you contact James and he'll tell you all about my background. So here we go. Goal setting. You run a law firm to help people, obviously. You run a law firm to be of service to clients, obviously. But separate and apart from it being a practice, it's also a business. So let's talk about the business, because you started this business, you started this law firm to make a profit, I hope. You probably told your family that they would have to put up with some challenges. You probably told your family they have to make some compromises and make some investments and make some sacrifices in pursuit of building a business that can give them a better life. If anyone didn't make materially those kind of commitments or promises, implicit if not explicit, to your family, please in the chat just let me know. If you did make a promise or a commitment like that, either explicit or implicit to your family, that the compromises, the challenges, the sacrifices, the investments, just putting up with your bullshit that you bring home when you build a business, and we all have shit that we bring home when we're starting a business. I'd like everyone to just acknowledge and say, put a Y for yes in the group chat. So I know you're there. I know you're tuned in, and I want to hear that you told your family. Good. If anyone said no, just put, oh, one of them, no. Jennifer, no. When it comes time for Q&A, Jennifer, if you put no, I'd really like to hear, and I'm not challenging you, I just would like to understand that circumstance, because it's very unusual that someone doesn't have family or someone who relies on them who is expecting your law firm to be profitable. Here's the point of this. It's a business, right? This debate about is it a profession or is it a business, that debate presents a false choice. Because the truth of the matter is it's both. It is a profession. The practice of law is a profession, but the business of running a law firm is a business. So let's talk about how you would evaluate the performance of any other business that you invested in. So let's just use as an analogy a restaurant. And let's suppose a friend or a family member comes to you, and he or she is a very accomplished chef. They cook great food. Everyone loves their cooking. There is no question, there is no doubt as to their skill as a chef. Great chef, check. Next, they're hardworking, check. Third, they're honest, check. Fourth, they care deeply about serving the very best product that they can. They want to serve great, healthy, nutritious food. Check. All the great characteristics, right? And they say to you, I want to start a restaurant. I want you to invest in my restaurant. I want you to invest money in my restaurant, just like you asked your family, everyone but Jennifer, you asked your family to invest money in your law firm, either directly by taking money out of the household budget to put into the law firm directly, or maybe you used household credit cards to get the law firm jump started, or maybe you invested opportunity costs in the law firm by saying, look, instead of going and getting a job working for someone making this, I'm going to work for a little bit less in the beginning because I'm going to build my own law firm and eventually make much more than that. That's still a financial investment you asked your family or the people who you share a household to make. Number two, the owner, the chef comes to you and says, I want you to invest money to help me start my restaurant. I also want you to invest time. I'm not just going to take your money. I'm also going to ask you to give me some time helping me in this restaurant, either helping me work day in and day out in the restaurant, or help me work on the plan and the thinking around the restaurant, or just be willing to let me not be a full participant in household responsibilities for a little while I get this restaurant started. Either way, I want you to invest your time to support me and help me start this restaurant. So you're going to invest your money, you're going to invest your time, and I also want you to invest your reputation in helping me start this restaurant, because I'm going to start this restaurant, and then I want you to go around and tell all your friends and tell all your family and tell everyone Tell all your business acquaintances, tell everyone about this restaurant to help launch this restaurant. Put your reputation at stake to help me launch this restaurant, right? You would all have the same questions, I hope. The first question you would all ask is, well, what's my return on investment going to be? How much money is this restaurant going to make? And how much of that money that the restaurant grosses, top line gross revenue, how much of that gross revenue will I, the investor, get to have? How much profit will this restaurant produce? And if the owner of that restaurant said, or if the would-be founder of this restaurant was like, I don't know, pull a number out of the air. I mean, you would not invest your money in that restaurant, right? Right. I know that all of you are saying yes, because only a crazy person would invest in that restaurant. And then you say, okay, so that's the money question. You got to give me a clear, objective answer as to how much profit is this restaurant supposed to make. Next question that I have is, how is our life going to be better because I'm investing my time, my patience, and helping you to start this restaurant? I understand you're going to be working long hours in the beginning, and I will pick up the kids, and I will do more household chores, and I will, you know, take on more household responsibilities. But I want to know that there is an end in sight and that this is going to lead to us living a better quality of life with less stress and having more control over our time and you being happier and you being less stressed out and you being more present here for the family. And if the owner, if the person who is going to start the restaurant said, no, I don't ever plan to work less than 60 hours a week. I plan to just keep working my ass off. I don't see how it's really going to make our home life better. And I certainly have no plans of giving you any way of objectively measuring that. You would not be a willing participant investing in that restaurant. Am I right? If you don't agree, put no in the chat. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that you all agree with me. Okay, looks like we all agree. And last and not least, you would say as a would-be investor in this restaurant, what kind of food is this restaurant gonna serve? Is it gonna be an Italian restaurant? Is it gonna be a Chinese restaurant? Is it gonna be a Mediterranean restaurant? Is it gonna be a steakhouse? Is it gonna be a seafood restaurant? Is it gonna be fancy dining with white tablecloths and silverware? Or is it gonna be a quick serve restaurant and a drive-through? What's the vision here? What's the concept of this restaurant you're asking me to invest in? And the would-be restaurateur who wants you to invest your money and your time and your energy and then ask you to promote it says, well, I don't know. It's going to be a little bit of everything. We're going to have a $40 steak on the menu, and we're going to have a $2 French fries and milkshake on the menu, and we're going to have a fine dining area, but there's also going to be a drive-through just in case anyone – oh, and people can come in. I mean, you wouldn't invest in that restaurant because it wouldn't make any sense. Am I right? If you disagree, speak up, put a no. Otherwise, I'm going to assume you agree. These are kind of rhetorical questions. I know that. All right. We all agree. Now, here's the thing. Just change restaurant to law firm, and these are the questions we need to answer. Because you all acknowledged, all but one of you led your family to believe that you were going to help them live a better life by their cooperating with your plan to start this law firm. Well, they may not have articulated it quite this way, but I think it's reasonable to assume that your family is probably made up of reasonably intelligent people, and that they probably are concerned about how much more income the household is going to have because of your law firm. That's the financial performance. They're probably concerned about how much more free time and what better quality time, and you know, how are we going to measure whether you're a happier person because of our investment in this law firm. That's the personal component. And how is this law firm going to make the world a better place? We had a member years ago who we just couldn't figure out why this guy couldn't get traction with his criminal defense law firm. He had everything going for him. He's smart. He's a current member. But he's smart. He's hardworking. He cares about his clients. He's a very good lawyer. And he really understands kind of the science behind DUI testing. And he had a great business plan. I mean, we helped him put together a really solid business plan, and it had a fantastic marketing strategy behind it with a great marketing message and built out marketing systems. And I mean, everything about this firm was like, why can't we couldn't figure out why this thing wasn't working. Until one day I'm talking to him, and this is on me, by the way. I take responsibility for not asking this question. It wasn't his responsibility to volunteer it. I don't know why I didn't ask this question sooner. But I come to find out that while he's struggling to build his criminal defense law firm with a special niche on DUI defense, his wife is an ER doctor who spends her nights saving people's lives who are involved in automobile accidents with people who are drinking and driving. I wonder why this guy can't get traction. I mean, as soon as we figure that out, it was like, oh, now I know why this isn't working. And we had to talk to him and say, look, either your wife's got to get on board with what you do, or you're going to get divorced. I'm not saying you should, or you're going to wind up getting divorced, or let's pick a different practice area that your family can get behind and be proud of you for doing. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing criminal defense. The world needs criminal defense lawyers. I very sincerely believe that criminal defense lawyers do a great service to our society. I very sincerely believe that. Prosecutorial overreach is a real thing. The point I'm making is for this particular individual whose wife is an ER doctor, as soon as he picked a different practice area, it's like, boom, everything just started working for him like magic. But it wasn't magic. It's that we got his goals into alignment with his values and his family and all those other kinds of things. So what we want to do here is we want to get clear and help you get clear on what are your goals. Our definition of a successful law firm is a business that serves your financial needs, means it gives you enough net income to live the way you want to live. Now, I have posed this question to literally thousands of lawyers. And I want to be extremely clear so we understand the question that I am not asking. I am not asking this question. This is not the question I am asking. I am not asking, what will you settle for? I'm not asking, what can you get by on? I'm not asking, what can you do without? I'm not asking that question. What I'm asking is, how do you actually want to be living your life? In your heart of hearts, how do you really want to be living your life? What kind of home do you really want to be living in? What kind of car do you really want to be driving? What kind of domestic services do you really want to have servicing your household? What kind of vacations do you really want to be taking? What kind of charities or philanthropies do you want to be supporting, and at what level? What kind of education do you really want to be able to provide for your children? I'm not asking what kind of house are you willing to live in, what kind of car you'll settle for driving, what kind of vacations you can make do, or you know, get by on. I'm asking, what do you really honestly want? Because the thing is that it is paradoxical, but extremely reliable, that aiming for financial goals that support a lifestyle that falls short of inspiring you is actually harder than achieving financial goals that support a lifestyle that sets you on fire, like you can't wait to do it, and really motivates you, and you gotta have that life because it really matters to you. So self-honesty here is critical. Now, I'm not gonna try and talk any of you into living in a big fancy house if you really want to live in a cabin down by the lake. I'm not gonna try and talk any of you into driving an expensive car if you don't care about driving an expensive car. I'm not gonna try and talk any of you into having, you know, extensive, E-X-T-E-N, T like in Tom, extensive domestic services if you genuinely and sincerely don't want to have a lot of domestic services in your home. I'm not gonna try and talk any of you into paying for your kids' college tuition if you don't care about paying for your kids' college tuition. I don't care. I wanna make sure you understand. I don't care. I'm not gonna try and convince you that you should want to live better than you want to live. What I am gonna do is try and help you, because I've had this conversation with literally thousands and thousands and thousands of men and women, husbands and wives, fathers and mothers. I have a pretty good idea of what it costs to live at different levels. And what we find is that a lot of times when we do this, there's a very big disconnect between how I want to live and what it costs to live that way. Or sometimes it goes the other way, how much I think it costs to live versus how I really want to live. So I'm going to try and help you get this into alignment so you've got some real meaningful financial goals that we can build the entire business around. Because for example, I'm just going to pick a number. If you say, hey, it only costs, let's just say $100,000 to live the way I want to live, total income, $100,000. And let's just say for argument's sake, that we're gonna build a law firm that's engineered to work at 25% profit, 25% total owner benefits. That is the salary that the business pays you plus the profit on your K-1 that the business distributes to you plus the value of all the other benefits. So for example, the law firm will provide a car for you. Your car payment is $1,000 a month. If the firm pays you $90,000 a year, we would say your total owner benefits is $102,000 a year. $90,000 salary plus a $12,000 a year automobile that the business pays for, we'd say $102,000. And if we determine that the firm's going to run at, let's say, a 25% profit margin, then we would obviously have to make plans to run a $400,000 law firm, because $400,000 gross revenue at a 25% profit margin would give you $100,000, which would allow you to live the way you want to live if it's $100,000 is actually the number. Now, we're not going to talk fantasy. We're not going to say how you want to be living 10 years from now. And we're also not going to talk crazy talk of how you want to be living 3 months from now. We're going to go with about an 18 to 24 month range. We find that 18 to 24 months is, that's, we're going to just, 18 to 24 months we find is, it's far enough in the future that you aren't going to start freaking out and panicking. And it gives us time to make changes and adjustments to get you there. But it's not so far out into the future that it's not real. So that's the financial part of this question. How much does it cost to live the way you want to live? And you'll be doing that for homework. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to press *6 to raise your hand, or press the little thing at the bottom to raise your hand on the chat. And we'll, on the participants button, and you'll raise your hand and I'll take you off of mute and we can have this conversation. And let me help you, because you could spend hours and hours and hours, and I've met many people who have spent years and years and years trying to figure out something that, just because I've been doing this for 20 years, I can probably help you resolve in just a few minutes. Lots of aha moments usually around this. So press *6 to raise your hand, or press the little raise hand thing on the bottom. And let me help you get clear on a total owner benefit net financial goal, which we will then use as the foundation to build your entire business plan around. Because again, going back to $100,000, if $100,000 is the number with 25% margins, we got to gross $400,000. If the average case or matter is going to be, let's just say $4,000, then you know you need 100 cases or matters to open every year, and you need 100 cases or matters every year to close. And if that's 8 per month. And if you're, so that tells us the staff we need to have needs to be able to handle 8 per month. And that tells us the physical plant that is needed to support the staff that can handle 8 per month. And that tells us the marketing we have to do to bring in 8 per month. And you get the idea. All right, Juan is going to be first. And I'm going to ask everyone, just hold on 1 second. I need to just ask someone to bring me a glass of water. So just press your hands below. Just start raising your hands. Start pressing *6 on your phone. Or maybe *7. I don't remember. And I'll be right back. I just got to get some water. I'll be right back. Start pressing your things. All right, I gave the universal, and someone's gonna bring me some water. All right, so Juan, you're first.
Hi, Arjun, how are you?
Hey, Juan, how are you?
Fine. Okay, so the exercise, you want me to tell you what I need, what I envision to be my goal? Is that the order?
Say again?
I'm sorry. The exercise right now, can you hear me?
Now I hear you.
Okay. So right now we're going to be talking. You want me to talk to you about my goals, my financial goals for my business, my vision for my business? Is that what we're doing right now?
I have two questions for you. One question is, how much total owner benefit, thank you, does the law firm have to generate for you to live the way you want to live?
Gotcha.
I don't want to hear the vision, the grand vision of things. I don't want to hear big long story. I don't even care about gross revenue right now. I just want to know that the Lozada household requires Juan to bring home X number of dollars per year. Total owner benefits, W-2, which is the salary the firm will pay you, plus K-1 profits, plus whatever else you're going to run through the business, in order for you to say that financially it's a success. And then we'll talk about your magic statement, which is the answer to the question when people say, what do you do? How do you answer that question? So first is just the number.
So I would say 1.5 million.
You need $1.5 million total income?
Total income per year, yes.
For your family?
For my family.
All right. So that means that if the firm were to operate at a 25% profit margin, for example, we would need to build a $6 million firm.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. If you don't mind me asking, how much are you earning now from the firm?
say about 150.
Sorry?
150.
$150,000. Okay, what's the most you've ever earned in anything? Practice of law, I don't care what the business was or the job.
Probably 150,000.
Okay. How real is $1.5 million of personal income for you? And I'm not saying this to be a jerk or to be dismissive. I'm saying my income, my wife and I earn right around between two to $3 million a year from this business. My income, it could be 3 million, but I leave about a million in the business every year. So my real income is right around $2 million. My W-2, my K-1 profit distributions, and then all the stuff that I just run through the business because my tax strategist helps me do all that. It's right around $2 million. Okay.
Right.
And the reason why I'm sharing that. And by the way, guys, I'm completely transparent. You can ask me anything you want to ask me. I have the internal fortitude to decline a question if I don't want to give you the answer to it. So don't be afraid of asking me anything you want. When my income was around $100,000 a year, I never had $150,000 income. I had $125,000 income, then it dropped to $60,000, then it dropped to nothing, then it was nothing, then it was nothing, and then it kind of like popped up very quickly. The point that I'm trying to make is I'm not sure that I really had any appreciation or understanding. Like $1.5 million income would not have been something that would have been real to me. You get what I'm saying? And maybe it is to you. I'm not saying it isn't or that it can't be, but I'm saying this for your benefit and to protect you and to protect everyone, that coming up with numbers that aren't attached to a very real lifestyle is dangerous to this entire exercise. It tends to undermine the entire exercise. So for example, what kind of car do you drive?
Nissan, the largest Nissan, like an Armada.
Okay, a Nissan Armada SUV.
Yes.
All right, where is that car parked right now?
Outside my office.
I want you to imagine if you walked outside after this meeting was over and your car was not where it's supposed, where you left it, what would you do?
I'll try to figure out if somebody tore it by accident. I will then call my wife and ask her to pick me up and bring me to rent a car.
What will you do? I literally, sincerely want to know, if you went outside after this meeting and your car was not where you left it, I want you to really tell me what you would do. Everyone on this call, please put yourself in this exercise. Pretend like I'm having this conversation with you. Make this real for yourself.
I will contact the landlord and figure out whether, you know, she has a company that normally comes and tows cars that are there. And
you call the landlord and you say, hey, my car's missing. Did your company accidentally tow my car away?
Right. Then I will call my wife and I'll tell her, hey, pick me up. Let's go rent a car. We'll figure out.
Well, wait. You call the landlord, and the landlord said, nope, we didn't tow your car. You went on mute. What? Okay, hold on. Juan, I can't hear you. Am I on mute, or is he on mute? Juan, I can't hear you. Can you hear me? You can hear me? I can't hear you. I think you might be on mute. I think you might be on mute on your side, I mean. I'm gonna put your hand down and then put your hand back up again and see if we can reset it, okay? His screen does not show mute. Right, hang on. Juan, can you hear me? I don't know what's going on here. Stephanie, are you listening to this? Here she comes. I can see Juan, and Juan can hear me, but I can't hear him.
Is he muted?
Come in. He says he's not muted.
I don't know.
I mean, literally, it just went mute in the middle of a sentence. No, nothing happened there.
Can we come back to Juan?
Yeah, we can come back to Juan. But that's not working either. Yeah, we think it might be on your Zoom connection, Juan. Maybe he needs to log out and log back in.
Will you try that, Juan?
Juan, would you mind logging in? Okay, when you come back, just raise your hand again, and we'll pick up where we left off, okay? Sorry about that. Well, now I hear him. Juan? Juan? No? Oh. Sorry. All right.
She's next.
Chana?
No, she's still muted.
How do I unmute her? Chana?
There.
Hi.
Hi.
Am I pronouncing your name right, Chana?
No, you say Shanna.
Shanna. Hi, Shanna.
Hi.
Okay, so first question is, how much net income does the business need to generate for you to live the way you want to live?
Well, I guess that's the question. I would like to get owner benefits of about $300,000. I take home about $200,000 right now, but my daughter's starting college in about a year. And so I know that expense is going to not be something that will be funded by grants or loans. So I know I need to kind of make plans to pay that.
So you want your total owner benefits to go from 200,000 to 300,000.
I'd like that. Yeah. By the time she goes to college, which is in next, not next school year, but school year after that.
Got it. Okay. So that's a number that's real to you.
That's real to me.
It has a consequence if it doesn't come true.
Correct.
So when, not if, we get to a point where we're asking you to do something that's out of your comfort zone, because if you want things to be different, things have to be different, right? So when, not if, we're asking you to do things that are out of your comfort zone, and you start giving excuses and stories, we're going to come back to, if you do this, you can pay for your daughter's college tuition. And if you don't do this, then you don't pay for your daughter's college tuition. And that's going to be real enough to you that you'll take all your excuses and shove them up your ass.
Yes, I will. Yes.
Good. Good. Yes. That's our rallying cry is Taye Astuya. Taye Astuya. Take all your excuses and shove them up your ass.
I'm there.
Sorry?
I said I'm there for that.
Why can't I do this everywhere? T A Y E. See that? Taye Astuya.
Oh, okay.
Take all your excuses and shove them up your ass.
Got it.
All right.
Got it.
And that's why it's really important, because what happens when people set these goals that are like these bullshit goals, right? It doesn't motivate. It fails to motivate them. And so when they got to do something that's uncomfortable, it's like, well, I didn't really care enough about that goal to begin with. So why would I do something that's uncomfortable just to achieve something that I don't care that much about?
Right. This is becoming a really urgent goal, I think. I have been kind of on this progression, about 30% increasing a year. I did some spreadsheets on that pretty recently. And so I'm kind of on a 20% per year increase, I guess, with a jump here and there, maybe a little bit higher, a little bit lower. But I need to really crank it up at this point.
Right. And we also have to look for ways to take more profits perhaps out of your firm too, not just about growing gross revenue.
Right.
Okay, good. All right, so $300,000. Okay, and historically, when you've taken $200,000 out of your firm, that's $200,000 typically out of a firm grossing how much? In other words, what kind of margins are we looking at here?
$750,000.
So 200 out of 750, 200 divided by 750, so it was roughly 26%.
Yes.
Okay, and I think you mentioned that you've been growing your firm consistently like 30% per year.
Right, right. Okay.
That's a pretty reasonable, healthy margin for a firm that's growing at, you know, 30% per year. When you hear about law firms that are throwing off like 35, 40% margin, they tend to be flat, right? And if you're growing really fast, the margins tend to get real skinny because you're reinvesting so much in the business,
right?
25, 30% growth, 25-ish percent margin, probably a very healthy business. So yeah, so basically we got to take your firm from 750 to $100,000. We got to generate another $400,000. Pretty much we got to take it to 750, about $1.2 million.
That's the goal.
Yeah, that's good. Could I possibly convince you to raise that a little bit to $1.5 million? And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
All right. So at $1.5 million, the firm will be big enough and the extra incremental income that it generates will afford you the ability to hire a full-time professional legal administrator. Generally, that happens around $1.5 million in most firms. You get what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. So, what does a full-time legal administrator specifically do that an office manager or an office administrator would not do?
The legal administrator is your equal. Okay? As good as a lawyer as you are, you see like up here? Your legal administrator is that good at administering the business of the law firm. An office manager typically is down here. You get it?
Okay.
And so the office manager is like having a junior associate who helps you work your cases. A legal administrator, a professional legal administrator, is like having a senior attorney who is as good as you, who you can literally just hand the case to and it's in good hands.
Okay.
You get the distinction?
Yes, I see.
Right. So would she need both an office manager and a professional legal administrator? No, probably not. I mean, it depends what you know, people have all different definitions for office manager. So I don't want to say definitively yes or definitively no. The traditional definition of a dedicated full-time office manager, you probably don't need a full-time dedicated office manager if you have a full-time professional legal administrator.
So there's some overlap.
Well, so a full-time professional legal administrator. Like you go to the Association of Legal Administrators, ALANET.org. ALANET.org. Oh, that typed in wrong. ALANET. It spell corrected ALA to planet. So then I retyped ALANET.org.
Okay.
If you go to ALANET.org and start looking at job descriptions, look at the job board for the way legal administrator jobs are described. Okay.
Okay.
A professional legal administrator in a larger firm, 50 lawyers, 100 lawyers, 200 lawyers, this is going to be a person who's making $300,000-$400,000 a year.
Okay.
It's going to be an MBA, a CPA. This is like a legit professional business manager, right? In a small law firm, $1.5 million, $2-3 million, you're going to want to hire a professional legal administrator who's run a $3-10 million law firm before, so they know where you're going. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, I see what you're saying.
A huge mistake that people make, and our members make this mistake more often than I'd like to talk about, because it aggravates me every time they do it. You know, you don't want to take an office manager who's never run a multi-million-dollar law firm before, and you've never run a multi-million-dollar law firm before, and it becomes like the blind leading the blind.
Right.
Right? A professional legal administrator who's run a $2-5 million law firm before, this is probably going to be in most markets $90,000, $100,000, $150,000 a year. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So between $1 million and $1.5 million, you kind of have to carve out $100,000 to $150,000 of that extra revenue for your professional legal administrator.
I see. So shoot for 1.5 instead of 1.2 to afford that salary too.
Right. And here's the thing. How much of your time right now do you currently invest doing the kinds of things that you imagine a professional legal administrator probably does? And if you want, I can describe it for you.
Tell me big picture what that is.
They are going to be sitting down with you once a quarter to review your business plan, your budget. They are going to be creating policies, procedures, systems for how your firm operates. They are going to be training your team on how to operate with those policies and procedures and systems, including the attorneys. They're going to be holding the team accountable for their performance against objective key performance indicators and benchmarks. They're going to be holding the attorneys accountable for making sure that that the cases are progressing according to schedule. When the attorney pushes back and says, screw you, you're not even a lawyer, you don't understand, they're going to say, you're right, I'm not a lawyer, I don't understand, but we have designed a system where at this point, the case is supposed to be midway through. And we're now midway through the case, and 20% of your cases are further ahead of schedule, and that's good, and I want to understand why they're ahead of schedule, so we can figure out what we can learn from that to make our business more efficient. And 20% of your cases are behind schedule, and we need to look at those and figure out why are they behind schedule, so we can figure out how to make our business more efficient, or maybe we need to give them extra attention. It's project managing the cases all the way through. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I see what you're saying.
So, and of course they're dealing with all the vendors and they're negotiating contracts and they're dealing with HR and they're dealing with the payroll service and they're negotiating insurance and supervising and they're making sure that all the insurance is all up to date and current. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Our COO service, you know, we do CEO, COO, CFO. Our COOs are professional legal administrators. A professional legal administrator in any other business would be called the chief operating officer of the business. So how much of your time do you currently spend doing that job?
I'll be honest, I have a very good office manager right now. I don't spend a lot of time doing that at all. I mean, we have a monthly office meeting. We call that the work in progress meeting, where we all sit down around the table and kind of talk about the progress of cases. So I'm involved in that for the other lawyer and myself and the staff. But
right.
Most of the other stuff, not so much.
But in terms of, but is it getting done?
It is getting done.
Oh, good. Good. Then yeah, you might have gotten very, very lucky. And maybe, you know, if you really like your office manager and if he or she is really that good, you might want to look at the Association of Legal Administrators has a CLM program, Certified Legal Manager program. And it is no joke. It is a hard course. It's a hard certificate to earn. and it might be an investment you want to tell him or her that you're willing to make to get them ready for where you're going.
Okay.
But
okay.
The point that I'm trying to make is most of the people on this call, their answer is probably going to be that they don't spend very many hours doing that job.
And it's not getting done. Okay. So I don't have specific KPIs like I need to have right now. I don't necessarily keep track of the days of the length of the cases. I estimate those things. But she's working on the policies and procedures and the training plan and all those things, you know. So she does the HR and the vendor contact, the all the payroll and negotiating all the insurance stuff. She does all that stuff.
Fantastic. I mean, it may be that you have a legal administrator who you've merely been calling an office manager.
I don't know.
Anyway, investigate. But here's the point that I'm making. At $1.5 million, either she or someone else is going to have to be really operating as the chief operating officer of this business. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
And we want to take that off of you. And so we better figure that, you know, 200,000 of that $1.5 million is allocated for buying your freedom. Because what a lot of lawyers do is they put that money in their pocket and then they get up to around $1.5 million and like the weight of the world is on their shoulders and they can't ever grow the business past around $1.5 million. And then, of course, they get the house and they get the cars and they get all the financial obligations that go with having that extra $150,000 in their own pocket. And then they can't ever get unstuck and they're trapped. Right. So I want you to go into this eyes wide open and make a plan. And I'm just telling you, $1.5 million actually is an easier business to run than $1.2 million.
Okay. Okay.
You understand exactly what you're saying?
I understand what you're saying. And if it still nets me the amount that I need to be able to meet those goals that I have or those expenses that I can see on the horizon, I'm down with that.
Well, it's not just that it's going to net you the income. It's that it nets you the income and you have someone who's as good as you are at the practice of law. Imagine having a counterpart, an equal, who's that good at the business of running the law firm.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine how much better your life becomes, right?
Yes, yes, significantly. No worries.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, so good. So now we got some real goals. Good?
Yes.
All right, now, yes. Did Erica talk about the magic statement?
The magic statement? No, I don't know that.
Okay, so this is the lesson that I was supposed to teach. I apologize. When you meet with everyone, I'm teaching this lesson to everyone. I'm sorry, I should have taught it earlier. When you meet with a prospective new client or a potential referral source or anyone else, there is a question that you can always predict everyone will eventually ask you. And it's inexcusable to go out into the world unprepared to answer this question since you know you're going to get the question, right? Like if you absolutely positively know it's going to rain and you go out without an umbrella and you get rained on, you got no one to blame but yourself, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So you know you're going to get this question. And the question is, someone will eventually say, Shanna, what do you do? You know you're going to get that question, right? What do you do?
What do I do when someone asks me to cut my fee?
No.
What's the question you're talking about? That's the question I know.
The question is, what do you do? You're at a networking event.
Oh, not at a potential new client.
Someone's going to ask, what do you do?
Oh.
That's,
I say I help families through difficult situations with their children.
Good. That's what we would, that's fantastic.
The elevator statement. I mean, I went to this Lee Rosen class about 10 years ago. And
you got, there you go. Elevator statement, the laser talk. I call it a magic statement. And the reason that I call it, same thing. We're talking about the same thing. And the reason I call it a magic statement is because the way that I started describing this thing 20 years ago, I don't know why, but this is the way I started describing it 20 years ago, is imagine a perspective, you go through all this effort with marketing to bring a prospective client to the door, right? And they pull into the parking lot and they see law office sign over here and they see magician over here, right?
Uh-huh.
They're all going to go to the magician because they really don't want legal services.
Right.
They're willing to take legal services if that's what they have no other choice but to do in order to achieve their goals. But if they could just go to a magician, they'd go to the magician, wouldn't they?
Probably, yes.
You all would. I would too. Yeah. Right? Who can blame them? And they go to the magician, and the magician is going to ask them a question. The magician is going to say, what do you want? Now, what kind of law do you do?
I'm a family law lawyer.
Family law, right. You just said that. Family law. What do you want? No one's going to tell the magician, what I want is a divorce. No one's going to say, what I want is to go to some depositions. I really want some hearings and some discovery. And if you could throw in some motion practice and maybe a couple of mediations, man, if you could get me a trial, I'd be in heaven. No one says that. No one wants that.
Right.
I'm willing to endure all of that to get to what I really want. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the magician says, I've got my magic wand. Tell me what you want. I will tap you on the head and get it for you. What's your client going to say they want?
To be finished.
I'm
to
the
get
magician.
What they want in court. I'm, to get I'm what the they
magician.
Want.
I'm the magician. You want to be finished. You got to be a little bit more specific.
So what they say is that what they say is, I just want this to be over. I want what I want, and I want this to be over without it being painful.
I'm the magician. You're the client.
Oh, I'm the client. Okay.
I'm the magician. Okay. You're the client. And I'm saying, what do you want? I'm going to tap you on the head with the magic wand and get it for you, but you better be clear what you want, because if you say it unclearly and I tap you on the head, you might wind up as a fraud.
So, I mean, you know, if I'm being honest, perhaps I would say I'd like for my husband to have custody of our children, and I'd like to exercise consistent visitation.
Okay. So if I could tap you on the head with a magic wand and get your husband to step up and be an equal co-parent with visitation.
And he is, yes.
That's what you would want.
Yes.
Great. Bing. There you go. Mm-hmm. Right? So, I mean, that's a very specific situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if I was out at a networking event, if I was doing a speech, if I was writing an article, if I was hosting a webinar, if I wrote a book in the very beginning of the book, if I sat down with you at a meeting as a prospective client, if I sat down in a meeting with you as a prospective new member of our team, could you imagine how powerful it would be if I said, our law firm helps parents to co-parent effectively when they split up?
Well, that's what I tell people.
Right.
Right.
Tell that to people when you're interviewing them to come work for you?
I tell people that when they are interviewing me to hire me and I'm interviewing them to see if I want to represent them.
I'm asking, do you tell that to people when you're thinking about hiring them to be your employee?
I don't do the interviews.
Ever?
Well, only for lawyers.
Okay.
So yes, and I tell the lawyers that.
Does whoever does the interviews start off by saying, welcome to our firm. Before we get started, let me tell you, this is what we do. We
probably
are all about helping people.
Helping people through difficult situations. Helping people co-parent afterwards. Right. Yes. That's the theme.
Perfect. Listen. It's not surprising to me that you have a $750,000 law firm, because you've got this stuff figured out.
A lot of it, but not all of it. I need to get
well,
it.
But I'm giving you compliment, and I'm also going to ask you now in a moment to give some words of encouragement to everyone on the call who might aspire to have a $750,000 law firm. True or false, building a $750,000 law firm is relatively mechanical. You do certain things a certain way, you get a $750,000 law firm.
True story. Yes. True.
Right. Yes. So, fantastic.
And it's not just about working harder or working more. It's about organizing things. It's about creating processes. It's about making sure everyone's on board with the same plan. I don't work any more now than I used to work when I was making $100,000 a year, when I was making $60,000 a year.
Well, let me tell you, when you've got a professional legal administrator, you'll get to even work even less.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Yeah. All right. Good. I feel very comfortable with where we're at for you.
Okay.
And so a lot of people, I don't know if you were watching the on the chat, but people were very, very complimentary and said that your questions were very, very helpful.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to go to Juan next because he got cut off before. Juan? Juan? Stephanie, are you listening to this? Why can't I take Juan off of... All right, well, while we wait for Stephanie to get here, I'm going to go to Melon. Oh, wait. Juan, can you hear me? We don't hear you, Juan. You might have your mic on mute. Give me 1 second. Guys, when I tell you that I can't do tech, I'm not exaggerating. I can't take Juan off of mute. And I also can't get Shauna back on mute, and I can't get Melon off of mute. Juan?
You're not the host.
Oh, I'm not the host. Oh! So I'm not so incompetent. My millennial just told me that actually the settings were wrong. Stephanie?
You're the host now.
Now I'm the host. Okay, now. Now, Shauna, I can lower hand. Oh, this does all these other things that I've been trying to figure out. So, Juan, can you hear me now? Stephanie, can you get Juan to...
I think the issue is on his head. I mean, not on his head, sorry, on his side.
His side.
Someone's at it. Are you on a remote desktop? He's not. Someone said to check your settings on your microphone.
I'm sorry, Juan. Well, maybe if he just dials in with his cell phone.
That tends to solve problems often.
That what?
That tends to solve the problem often.
Thank you, Juan. All right, while we're waiting for Juan to dial back in, I'm going to call in Melon.
Yes, it's actually Melon.
Hi, Melon.
How are you?
Good. So the two questions that I'm going to be asking you and everyone else is, what do you do? That's the whole magic statement conversation we were having before. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to ask you how much the firm has to give you in terms of total owner benefits for us to say financially that it's successful. Okay. So we can build the whole plan around that.
All right. What I do is help individuals who are either accused of crimes or in divorce litigation, and I help them minimize the impact of those legal situations.
So do you normally use the word individuals in casual conversation?
Yeah, I'm kind of a nerd.
Okay. So I help individuals, or would you normally just say I help people?
One or the other, but people's a lot warmer.
Okay. So let's go with I help people who what?
Have either been accused of a crime or involved in some type of domestic litigation. Whether it's a divorce, custody, modification.
Okay, so let's split those and have two different magic statements.
Okay.
Okay. And you help people who are accused of a crime to do what? To achieve what outcome? Remember the magic statement that the yes, tap of the wand?
The impact of that accusation on their future, their livelihood, their liberty, everything.
Is that what they say they want?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? I want to minimize it?
Well, no, they would say, I want it dropped. But, you know, that's what they mean.
What do they
want? Other than they just want it to go away. So
you help people who are accused of a crime make it go away? Is that what you do?
I try to do that, but you can't assure somebody you're going to make their criminal case go away.
But that is what you do.
Well, it's what I aim to do, yes.
I help people double the revenues of their law firm and work a lot less hours.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you want?
Yes.
Okay. Can I necessarily guarantee you're going to get that outcome? Of course not. Because you may find some way to screw up our instructions. You might not do what we ask you to do. Right? But that is what I do. That's what I'm in the business of doing. I'm in the business of helping lawyers double the revenues and work less hours and have more fun.
Okay, I understand. I guess I was framing my magic statement within the ethical confines of you cannot guarantee someone an outcome in any case.
And no one's guaranteeing anyone anything, but mm-hmm. This is what you do. You do make it go away.
Okay.
Isn't that what you do?
Yes.
Have you ever lost a case?
Absolutely.
Did the person go to jail for a long, long time?
I can't think of one where they did.
But they did go to jail.
Sometimes, yes.
So here's the point that I'm making. Yes. It would also be true to say, I lose cases and then my clients go to jail.
I don't think that would be very good for marketing, but yes, that would be true.
But that's a true statement. See, yes. Sometimes if we frame it in the negative, it's easier to see that we can also frame it in the positive. We're not making guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
We're having casual conversations with people at networking events. We're opening up speeches. We're opening up conversations when we're interviewing prospective new employees. Welcome to our firm. We're going to sit down and talk about you coming to work for our firm as a receptionist. Let me tell you, before we get started, what we do around here is we help people who are accused of crime to make it go away. How do you feel about that? And the receptionist says, oh my God, I cannot work here because I was once the victim of a crime and I think everyone who's arrested should go to jail forever and I couldn't possibly work for a law firm that makes it go away for people. I mean, I'm giving an extreme example to illustrate a point. Are you getting the point?
Oh yeah, I got it, yes.
Good. So, lawyers love to get in their own way when it comes to making marketing simple by trying to turn a marketing conversation into a legally binding contract, which it's not. It's a marketing conversation. You get what I'm saying?
I do.
Okay. So I'd like to ask you to play around with, I help people who are accused of a crime to make it go away, or whatever you want to say, but put it in those general terms. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
All right. Now, the other one is the divorce. So tell me about the domestic thing.
Yes, I do a lot of domestic litigation. And
what does that mean?
Want a different result. It depends on which party they are, what they have, do they want their kids or not. So I would say I make the hurt go away.
Do you?
Yes.
For who?
My client.
I'm at a networking event, and you say, I make the hurt go away, I don't know who you're referring to. Be more specific. I make the hurt go away for people going through divorce.
Okay, yes.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
What we're trying to do is we're trying to say something. This is not a brochure.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the last word on the subject that we have to cram in. This is not a legally binding contract. This is a conversation starter. Right?
Yes.
It's designed so that the person listening to it, if they're even remotely interested, they kind of can't help but ask you to tell me more, right? If yeah. if I'm in a position where I regularly need to make referrals to a family law attorney who does family law litigation, maybe I'm a family counselor, for example, and you say to me at a networking event or on an airplane sitting next to me, and you say, and I say, hey, what do you do? And you say, I make the hurt go away for people going through divorce. I have to ask, tell me more. You okay. get the idea?
I got it. Yes.
That's what the magic statement is meant to do.
Or you could say, I untie the knot.
You could say, I untie the knot.
Yes.
People will say, well, what do you mean? What knot are you talking about? And then you'll say, well, I help people who are going through a divorce untie the knot. That's great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that's something that creates a visual image in my mind. You created a picture in my mind around this. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to follow it up with a marketing system where you were to maintain top of mind awareness with me, then every time I run into someone who needs to get a divorce, who needs to untie the knot, mm-hmm. I'm going to think of you. And I'm going to think, oh, I know someone who helps people untie the knot. And then imagine you're giving someone a big box.
Mm-hmm.
A big box, okay? And inside this box is some really awesome, great stuff. But the box is so big that it's hard to get our arms around it. You get the idea?
Yes.
Your magic statement is like putting handles on the box. Because when I introduce you to the other person, I'm going to say, oh, Bob, let me introduce you to Melin. Melin helps
Melinda.
People.
Melinda.
Melinda?
Yes. Oh. I don't know why it's abbreviated on the screen.
Okay. Melinda.
Yes.
Bob, let me introduce you to Melinda. Melinda helps people untie the knot.
Mm-hmm.
Melinda, this is Bob. Bob needs to get out of his marriage. Boom, connection made.
Okay.
Bob, this is Melinda. Melinda makes the problems go away when you're being charged with a crime. That's what Melinda does. Bob, you got to talk to Melinda because you've been charged with a crime and Melinda makes it go away. Get it?
Yes.
That's what the magic statement is for. I'm going into a lot more detail with you because I'm trying to train everyone at the same time.
Yes.
Thank you for playing along. Yeah. Okay. So I want you to practice those out loud with, you know, some people who you don't know. Everyone, I want you to be practicing these magic statements out loud with people you don't know this week so that you can see the reactions they get, you can hear the reactions they give you, and what's going to happen somewhere, somehow, your magic statement will get repeated back to you by someone. And the way they repeat it back to you is going to be so much better than anything that you or me could ever come up with. And that's going to be what you use.
Okay.
But you got to get out there and start talking to people and they'll repeat it back to you. And then you'll be like, oh, that's exactly the way what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to practice it. All right. So okay. How much does the firm need to generate for you as total owner benefit for you to live the way you want to be living?
$200,000.
Yes. Okay. And what did the firm produce for you last year?
Probably 120.
Okay. And how much did it gross in order to give you 120?
Roughly. 190.
Okay, so I get the sense you don't have a whole lot of leverage. You don't have associates and people working for you. You're doing
I had a longtime partner for 27 years and he just retired.
The firm grossed 200 between both of you, or your firm grossed 200 and you took 120?
No, that was just the numbers for last year, just me.
Right, okay.
Yes.
The point I'm making is if the firm grossed 200,
yes,
and you took 120,
yes,
that only leaves 80,000.
Yes. I keep my overhead very low, which I realize will change. So,
sorry?
I realize that will change, but I set it up that way by design right now. We sold two commercial buildings when my partner retired at the end of 18.
Okay.
And I get an office right now and have one paralegal.
Okay. In order to gross 200,000, in order for you to take 200,000.
Yes.
And not work yourself to death.
Yes.
Let's just say for argument's sake, that the firm's going to operate at a 25% profit margin.
Okay.
And that's just a rough rule of thumb that I start with for most people. Because it's usually a good place to start. So that means it's got a 2-4. So that means we got to be aiming for an $800,000 firm.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So for an $800,000 firm, clearly you don't want to be the one doing $800,000 worth of legal work.
Correct.
So that means we got to hire, I would suggest you seriously consider hiring two associates.
Okay.
Play around with this business model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Play around with what it looks like with one senior and one junior associate versus two senior associates. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And sort of the idea that I have for you is an $800,000 firm. Let's say you hire $200,000 associates, back them up with, let's say, a $70,000 paralegal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, you got another $100,000 for office and office space and rent and insurance and utilities and all that stuff.
Yes.
And let's just say you throw in another $200,000 in marketing and someone to run the marketing and all of that?
Yes.
That would be 2, 3, 4, 5, 570 rounded up to, you're starting to see that Melinda's not doing any legal work here, right?
I do see that, yes.
Melinda's not doing any legal work.
Mm-hmm.
The two full-time associates, $100,000 associate doing criminal defense and family. You're talking about a pretty good associate. You're not talking about it like a wet behind the ears, need to hold their hand every step of the way kind of person.
Yes.
Backed up by a really solid $70,000 paralegal.
Mm-hmm.
Backed up by a $150,000 or $200,000 marketing budget. Working in a $100,000 space, and there's around $200,000 left over for you.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yes, it does.
It's just a way of, it's just a model that we're going to start playing with over the next several weeks.
Okay.
That's all I want you to do is start playing with this model in your mind.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. All right. Now I'm going to try to lower your hand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And.
Yeah, I don't think you muted me yet.
No, I don't think I did. Hang on. Now I'm going to mute you. Okay. So now you're mute and your hand is down. Good. Now Juan is unmuted.
Yes. I'm here.
Finally.
Can you hear me?
Yay! All right. Did you ever figure out what happened?
No, that's okay. My phone, I guess you fix it. I connected to my phone and everything's good now. So.
All right. Okay, good. So where I was going before is I wanted to talk about that. I want the number to be, okay. So we're talking about your car, right?
Yeah.
You go outside, your car's not there. First thing you're going to do is you're going to call the landlord and say, hey, did someone mistakenly tow my car? Landlord says, nope, no one towed your car. What's the next move?
I probably call my wife to pick me up so we can get a rental so I can get around while we figure this out. While we figure where my car is.
Are you not going to call the police and say, I think my car got stolen?
No, probably not yet. I mean, somebody, you know, I have two associates that normally, we have three cars at the office, and we normally use the cars. We have several keys out, so I'll probably call my two associates to make sure they didn't take them.
Okay, so you're going to call your landlord first and say, did someone tow my car? Landlord says no. Yeah?
Yeah.
Then you call each of the associates or send them each a text and say, are you driving my car? And they say, right. No. Now what?
Sure. We'll call the police.
Now you call the police and you file a police report.
Yeah.
And then what do you do?
Then I probably go get a rental.
And then you file an insurance claim.
Yeah.
And then the police show up and arrest you for filing a false police report and insurance fraud. Because it turns out you never actually owned a car. It was all a figment of your imagination.
Okay.
You understand how crazy this situation sounds?
Sure.
All right. So what I'm getting at is the $1.5 million, the house you're going to live in when you own when you have $1.5 million of income, the car you're going to drive when you have $1.5 million income, the domestic services you're going to have when you have $1.5 million income. You follow?
Yeah.
So the other day I got home and I asked my wife, I said, where is Letty and Elizabeth? And she said, well, Letty is homesick and Elizabeth went home early. Okay, got it. But like those people are real to me. They're real to me because they're real to me.
Sure.
But if I didn't, what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to have a lifestyle that's not so real to you that if you wake up and it's not there, you're not like looking around like, what the hell just happened? This is not the house I'm supposed to be living in. This is not the car I'm supposed to be driving. What happened to my domestic staff? I want you every day to be waking up with this so real in your mind while you sleep that when you open your eyes and you're not in that house and you go to your and you go outside and you don't have that car and you walk around your house and the domestic staff isn't there, I want that to seem strange to you.
Sure.
That's how real I want this to be. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when, yeah, it is the lyrics of a song. The police. Someone's posting on there. I think it's the police. Anyway, the point that I'm making is like, so when my wife and I were getting started, when we went from being broke to finally starting to build, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment with one bathroom. And our big goal in life was to have two bathrooms. That was like our biggest goal in life was to have two bathrooms because we hate sharing a bathroom and with each other. And we said, you know what? We're going to start living like we have a house with two bathrooms or an apartment with two bathrooms. And literally, we would wake up in the morning and we would have these discussions about who has to go use the other bathroom. And I had to use the other bathroom yesterday. And it's your turn to use the other bathroom. And it started to become very real to us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my question is, how real is that $1.5 million lifestyle? Do you know the house you'd want to live in or the neighborhood you'd want to live in?
Sure. Yeah, 100%. Yes.
Okay. Describe the house to me.
Well, it's a seven-bedroom house in an area in Austin. I live in Austin, Texas, okay? And there is a park called Westlake. It's really close to a man-made lake. And homes there around $2 million. Really, really nice house. Really nice homes nearby the lake and really close to downtown Austin. You take Lake Austin Boulevard, you're there.
Have you been inside many of those houses?
Yeah, I have.
All right, so oh,
not many. I have to show them of your phones. Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, I haven't been to many of them, but I have been inside some of those homes, yes.
Okay, so I want you to, like, really start working on, like, like go to an open house.
Yeah.
The pandemic and lockdown is over and all that. Go to an open house and like really try to be in that house and like imagine like really living there. Like try to make it as real in your mind as you can.
Sure.
Because this $1.5 million lifestyle, if the $1.5 million lifestyle is normal for you, if that becomes your standard, and if every time you look around you, the $150,000 lifestyle is as jarring and alarming and shocking to you as it would be as if your car was missing when you went outside,
sure,
then you'll start acting in a very different way. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's great. So we're building a model for a $6 million firm. Right, yeah. Now your firm is doing, I'm guessing, around 600,000, 700,000?
650, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, so we got to 10X your firm.
Yeah.
Good, so you're going to make a plan to 10X your firm.
Yes.
And when you tell me, I don't want to do that, I'm scared, how do I know it's going to work, blah, 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 I'm going to say, Taye Astuya.
Yes.
We agree?
Yes.
All right. What is your practice, and what do you do?
Sure. I am an immigration lawyer, but I also do some civil work. I have personal injury specifically.
Okay. So remember the whole conversation we were just having with Melinda about what do you do?
Oh, yes. Yes. I ensure that you are able to remain in the United States and have a better life.
Okay. You could say or what I would also recommend you and Melinda and Shana, think about is when people ask, what do you do? Answer and say, my firm. Because right. What we don't want to do is we don't want to get to a place where everyone needs Juan, and only Juan, and won't tolerate working with anyone but Juan.
Makes sense.
So when someone says, what do you do to me, Arjun? I say, well, my firm helps lawyers double the revenue. My business helps people double the revenue. My team helps people double the revenue, because most of the time you don't get to work with me directly. You work with one of the amazing people on my team. And I want that expectation to be set right from the beginning.
Of course.
Right? So at $6 million, you're obviously not going to be the one working on most, if any, of the files.
Correct.
So we need right from the get-go to train you and train everyone on the team to be able to say, when they say, what do you do? Oh, our law firm makes sure that people who are born in other countries get to stay in this country.
Yes.
Or words to that effect.
Yes.
Good. Practice that.
Okay.
Well, thank you for everything we had to get through to get this call going.
Thank you, Arjun.
Thank you. All right. Lower hand and mute. Okay, I've got time for a few more of these, and then we're going to set you off to do your homework. So, Jennifer.
Let's see. Hi. Can you hear me?
I do.
Okay, good. Sorry, I've got the audio on my phone and the video on my computer. So I'll tell you what I do first.
Yeah, Jennifer, what do you do?
My firm handles debts and taxes. I bring over 20 years experience, expertise as a CPA to create comprehensive and tax-efficient estate plans.
I don't care about that. You could be a magician. As long as you get me the results, okay. I don't care, do I?
No.
So my firm helps people with death and taxes. Is that about it?
Yes.
Okay. Russell, you're right. The call was supposed to go till 5, but I'm just going extra because call it a bonus. All right. So is that what you're going to say? Is my firm helps people with death and taxes?
Yes.
What do you help us with?
I create estate plans to ensure that your assets are managed and passed down to future generations as you desire.
That's like technical stuff I don't care about. I want to know
right.
what it does for me. What's the benefit?
The benefit is avoiding probate and spending 5 to 6 times more in legal fees. The benefit is controlling your children from your grave.
Okay. If that's really your thing, then you could say, when someone says, what do you do? And say, I help people control their children from the grave. I mean, that's vivid. It's powerful. It catches my attention. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. I just lost. There it is. Play around with that. Don't try and explain it as a technical answer. I don't care right. what tools you use. I just want to know the outcome that I can look forward to. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Good. And what is the, how much? How much does a business need to get, generate for you to live the way you want to live?
$250,000.
Okay, so we're looking at $1 million to $1.25 million business?
And that creates an enormous amount of anxiety, but yes.
Well, it's just math.
Yes.
Okay. I'd ask you, as we're going through this, since we're going to be knocking on the door of $1.25 million, I promise you the difference between $1.25 million and $1.5 million is really not that big of a difference. And it will afford you all the benefits that we were talking about earlier with Shanna in terms of being able to hire a professional legal administrator.
Okay.
Did Erica talk to you guys about the bonus workshop that you all get to come to, the live 2-day bonus workshop at the end of this whole thing? She did?
Yes.
Okay. I hope you all come. Not only are you going to learn a lot and not only will you, so some of you are saying not really, and it was mentioned, and okay, so let me explain. There is a bonus at the end of this boot camp, and the bonus is you get to come to a 2-day live business plan workshop. What we do is we take all the work we do during this boot camp, and we essentially unpack it and go into detail about each of the parts over like a day and a half. It's a 2-day workshop. And it's free. It's a bonus. We don't charge you anything more for that. And so I would very highly recommend that you all make plans to attend that because you've already, I mean, you're getting it for free. So you might as well come. Where is it? Right. So that's the million-dollar question. It's probably going to be in July at this point, and that'll be in, I forgot where our July live quarterly meeting is going to be. Somewhere on the planet that an airplane will take you to that city. Dallas.
I heard it was Dallas. Yeah.
I mean, my answer to everything is always someplace. I mean, that's the pilot's problem to get you there. Right? You just have to get yourself onto the airplane. The pilot will take you from wherever you're leaving to wherever you need to be. It's always funny to me when people need to know where things are going to be to make a decision whether or not to go there. The point that I'm making is for you, for Shanna, for Juan, for Melinda, I especially want to encourage you all to make sure you're at that live 2-day bonus workshop, because you're going to get the opportunity while you're there to mix it up with hundreds and hundreds of our regular members. And in the process of doing that, you're going to meet dozens and dozens and dozens of our members who have million, $3 million, $5 million dollar law firms and up. And you're not going to be able to recognize whether this is a person with a $200,000 law firm or a $2 million law firm just by looking at them. And you'll start talking to them And, you know, it'll come out that they have a $1 million, $2 million law firm, and they look just like you, and they come from backgrounds just like your background, and they have law firms that started off exactly where your law firms are right now, and they're not going to tell you that they're better lawyers than you, and they're not going to tell you that they're smarter than you, and they're not going to tell you that they work harder than you. They just put these things in place, and what they're going to tell you when you start asking them is that life is actually easier with a $1 million law firm than it is at $500,000. And life is easier with a $2 million law firm than a $1 million law firm. You get what I'm saying? So I really want to encourage all of you, especially those of you who your goals maybe are a little bit scary for you, to make sure that you plan on being there at that bonus thing. Okay, so that's Jennifer. Next up is, thank you, Jennifer. Jennifer, one more piece of Jennifer, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. If you're going to be doing a lot of these Zoom calls with clients and potential clients and referral sources and all that, I want to encourage all of you to go onto lawfirmpandemicresources.com, and there's a video series you can get for free on how to make sure you look good on camera. Because Jennifer, I can't see you at all. I see like-
I don't have the lighting bulb here, yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, I just want everyone to be, you know, now that we're in a world where everyone's using Zoom and we're meeting with clients and potential clients and referral sources and members of our team, it's really important that people can like see your face and see your eyes and see your facial expression in order to feel more of a connection with you. So this stuff really matters. Okay, I want to say that. All right, next is going to be Radio Rohan. I don't know. Radio Rohan? Can you hear me? You might have yourself on mute. Radio Rohan? Hello?
Oh, hello, hello.
Am I getting this right? Radio Rohan?
Yes, that's my podcast studio.
Is your name Rohan?
Doug Rohan. Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're a podcast?
Yes.
So makes sense.
I have my lighting and I have my panel boards behind me. So, yeah.
Excellent. All right. So, Radio, I almost called you Radio.
Doug Rohan.
So, Rohan, what do you do?
We have a three-tiered firm doing personal injury, workers' comp, and criminal defense in Atlanta.
Okay, so now let's go back to the lessons we've been talking about. If a person were to visit a magician and the magician were to say, what outcome do you want? What would they tell the magician?
That I protect the rights of the underserved Hispanic community.
Okay. Do you limit your role to legal rights, or do you think more holistically and think in terms of all rights?
We very much think of the broader picture, and we take our role as counselor very seriously. So somebody might come to me with a criminal matter, but we're going to look at the entire package and see what we can do to make sure they don't need to hire me again in the future.
Okay, so my firm protect, what is this again?
We protect the rights of the underserved Hispanic community.
My firm protects the rights of the underserved Hispanic community. Great. I want you to get in the habit of saying my firm not just I, because yes. I don't want you to get trapped as the only person who anyone ever looks to for help.
That's exactly why I'm here.
Good. All right. And what did the firm gross last year, roundabout?
Just shy of $1.2 million.
All right. And out of that $1.2 million last year, approximately how much did you take as total owner benefits?
About 20%.
So that would be $300,000?
A little under that, probably 2.8 or 280.
Around 280, okay. So what is the financial goal?
In the 18-month window, I'd like to see us at 3 million, and over the next 5 years, grow up to about 6 million.
Okay. Now, I have a pretty good instinct about these sort of things, and I'm getting a vibe off of you, and I'm not trying to impose this vibe on you.
Nope.
And if I'm way off, don't be shy about setting me straight. Is the 3 million and the 6 million really that important, or are you really more driven by wanting to have a bigger professional impact?
Wanting to have a professional impact in the community.
Okay. So I want you to think about how you're going to vision cast that financial impact in the community, and then let that tell us how big of a law firm you do or don't need.
Well, I have my pilot's license. If I want $180 million today, I could spend that money in a heartbeat. It would not last 10 years. So I have the potential, but you talk about being content, or what do we need? I mean, I'm in a happy house. I have a used Mercedes. If I just met payroll for the next 5 years, I would be satisfied and content. But if you want to ask where I want to go, I can dream pretty big.
Right. So what I'm saying is, like, for example, how to manage a small law firm. How to manage a small law firm exceeded my financial needs a long time ago. But it has not yet come close to achieving my professional goals. Because my professional goal is to change the conversation taking place in the legal industry. My professional goal is that lawyers stop bragging about how badly their law firms run, and that the doctrine of sacrifice is seen for the piece of self-destructive bullshit that it really is. You get what I'm saying? Now, to do that, I have to help a lot of lawyers. In the process of helping a lot of lawyers, this business will gross a lot more revenue and produce a lot more profit than I necessarily need to live the way that I want to lead, to live the way that I want to live. You get what I'm saying?
I legitimately want my employees to be grossly overpaid.
Sorry?
I legitimately want my employees to be grossly overpaid.
Well, let me tell you something. As someone who runs I've run a $1.2 million business, I've run a $3 million business, I've run a $6 million business, I've run an $8 million business, I've run an $11 million business, and last year I ran almost a $15 million business. It's actually unhealthy for the business, and it's actually destructive for the employee to grossly overpay them.
Okay.
It sounds nice, but it's actually not healthy for them, right? Because their income has to be tied to performance, right?
All of my paralegals are commission based after a base salary.
Performance based. Mm-hmm. Law firms don't pay commissions to non-lawyers.
Well, they're a percentage. It can be employees in Georgia anyway.
Sorry?
In Georgia, they can be employees of the law firm.
Let's talk about that separately.
Okay.
You just can't say my non-legal staff gets a commission, mm-hmm. or you're going to raise eyebrows with bar prosecutors who will eventually start taking a look into how your firm is run.
That's why we're here. We have lots of questions.
Yeah. Their income can be tied to performance.
Performance. Successful performance at the firm.
We'll talk about this later, but we'll talk about that later. But anyway, listen, so do you have like a short-term financial goal? Like last year, the firm produced $280,000 of income for you, and 18 months from now, we want to take that 280 to... Is there a number that like is tied to a certain lifestyle?
I'm satisfied with the income. We're in debt. We have transitioned from a one attorney firm to a four attorney firm, and I've run at a deficit for the last 12 months. And so my short-term goal is to get out of unhealthy debt.
How much?
About $350,000 right now.
Okay, so $350,000, 350 times four. So basically, we have to double the firm from 1.2 to 3 million. Now I understand, because that extra income will be used to pay off the debt. And then as soon as the debt is paid off, boom, your income doubles.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. I got it. Cool. All right, I got time for maybe two or three more of these, and then I got to get off my feet and go home. Thank you. And where is your podcast? Can you post it on the in the thing?
Yeah, I'll post a link. Spanish. You can work on your seventh grade Spanish.
Sorry?
You can work on your seventh grade Spanish.
I can work on my seventh grade Spanish. I don't understand.
It's all Spanish language podcast.
And?
Podcast is in Spanish.
Sí, comprendo.
Excelente.
I don't speak Spanish. My wife's from Argentina. And everyone who works for me is from speaks Spanish. But what is the podcast? I mean, people might want to see it.
It's Radio Rohan. I'll put the link in the comments.
Well, that is okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Put the link on so people can see it. Good. All right. Thank you. ODARCL.
Thank you.
Hi, what is your name?
Actually, Dawn. I was on the East last week. Now I'm on my wife's computer, so that would be her.
No worries. All right, Dawn, so what do you do?
I help people get paid who are injured.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward. I help people get paid who are injured. Okay, and what is the income goal?
There are two of us, two partners, $250 each.
What was it last year?
Last year was a bad year. About $70 each.
Okay. And what is a normal year?
About $150, $175.
Okay, so we got to get the income up to 250, and it sounds like as important as the amount is we want to make it more consistent, more predictable, more reliable, so it's not a roller coaster.
Correct.
Okay. Do you currently have an inventory of all of your open cases?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have them mapped out for the next 18 or 24 months, quarter by quarter?
No.
Okay. So what I want you to do is, and all the personal injury lawyers, all the contingency lawyers do the same thing. You see that? Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So what I want you to do, let me get a marker.
Show how to map.
So here's all your cases by name or case number or whatever you track them by. Got it?
Got it.
Q1, Q2, Q3, all the way for Q8. Got it?
Yep.
Rank the cases bottom to top by how soon you expect them to generate revenue.
Okay.
So it's like this. This is how it would look. You get it?
Yep. Got it.
And then for each case, I want you to rank approximately how much you expect it to generate for you. 50,000, 30,000, 10,000, 10,000, 5,000, and so on, right?
Okay.
Makes sense. Next to it, so this column is in, and this column is out.
Okay.
How much you expect to have to spend on the case? The $50,000 case is going to cost us $3,000. The $30,000 case is going to cost us $2,000. The $10,000 case is going to cost us $1,000, $1,500. You follow?
Yep.
So now we have a projection of revenue for Q1, and we have a projection of cost for Q1.
This will be floating every quarter.
Well, really every month.
Okay.
Every month you revisit it. Now, what I would very highly recommend you do, if you come to our the bonus thing that we talked about earlier, you guys will have access, I think, to the all member discussion forum, or if not, we'll figure out some way to connect you up with some of our members who do personal injury. And you'll say, hey, could we find some time while we're there and or find an attorney that you know locally who does personal injury? And essentially, you present your cases to them, and they present their cases to you. So for the Smith case, I'm projecting it's going to generate $50,000 in revenue. It's going to cost us $3,000 in expense, and it should cash flow within Q1. And the Smith case is a soft tissue injury, and the school bus ran over a dog, and the dog scratched someone's eye out, and blah, 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 blah. And you're going to say either, yeah, you buy it. You agree that it's worth $50,000. You agree that it's only going to cost $3,000. And you agree that it should all come to fruition in Q1. Or more often than not, you're going to say, no. You're way underestimating the cost, and you're being optimistic if you think it's going to be Q1. You better put that one up in Q2. And if you will curate your portfolio of cases every month like that, or even just every quarter like that, what you'll find is that this starts to become this.
Right.
It's just portfolio management.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my partner and I, we kind of have an idea. We've been doing this long enough that, you know, slip and fall, we know is just going to be a longer case because they tend not to settle. Or if you're working with certain insurance companies, they're going to say, I'm going to make you file a lawsuit and then we'll settle. Or I'm going to make you file a lawsuit and we'll pursue it all the way. So, yeah, those are we know those kind of factors.
Yeah. So, like I said, I mean, if you and your partner can be objective with each other, then that's great. Then this is much easier. If you and your partner can't be objective with each other, then you just find someone who's outside the firm. It's just hard for people to be objective with themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. I'm going to take you off of, I'm going to put you back on mute and lower your hand. And guys, it's 5:30. I got to go. So for everyone who I didn't get to this time, I'll be back on next week. You can post questions on the discussion forum, which you either already got or will soon get a link to. And the date for the bonus thing that I was talking about is going to be July 24-25, July 24, July 25 in Dallas. July 24 and July 25, Dallas. Just put it on your calendar now. Protect the dates. Give yourself a day to travel there before. Give yourself a day or two to stick around after in case you decide to. Just put it on the – oh, I put it the wrong thing. Sorry. Oh, yeah, I did. July 24th, I think, begins at – I don't know. Stephanie, you'll get all kinds of emails about this. You'll get all the details. I don't remember off the top of my head. Thank you all for being here.
Yeah, I know. Derek, I understand why you're asking the question. Stephanie will get all the you'll get all the details by email. I just want you to block the time on your calendar now. Yeah, you'll probably want to fly in the day before. I will tell you that. You'll probably want to fly in before the day before, and you'll probably want to not plan to leave until Sunday evening at earliest, because there's all kinds of extra stuff that happens that you'll probably want to stick around for. Entirely optional, not mandatory, not obligated, but you'll probably want to. All right. How do I take everyone off of mute? I'm going to unmute everyone. Everyone, I'm unmuting you so I can say thank you and so I can say goodnight and so I can, and I'll see you all next week. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, go away, go away.
That's fun. All right, bye, everyone. I'm hanging up.